Welcome, everybody. It's Talk Openly, the first of the year.
Woohoo!
All right. Yeah, great. So I'm Jack, and I'm here with my excellent and lovely friend Daniel. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, Jack. Hello, everybody. All of our friends out there in Talk Openly land.
Yeah, we're so glad to be back. We were gone last week. I was flying back from LA. And yeah, so I'm really glad to be here. I have to say though, Daniel, I am exhausted. And so if you see and feel me lagging, that's what's happening. I'm just floored.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Too much of the LA lifestyle.
Yeah, my sister and I have completely different sleep schedules. Like we and I stay at her house when I'm there for the holidays, and I think she could go to bed at 3 and be fine, but we kind of met in the middle and went to bed at like midnight first night.
Uh-oh.
Yep. And
My goodness, I think I've lost it. Lost the internet connection.
oh no,
I...
okay, yeah, you froze a little bit, but I there you go.
There we go, we're back.
Back. But yeah, so did you hear? I stayed up until like midnight several nights in a row, and yeah, I think and in the last couple of weeks I've really only worked like a few days, just because of how my schedule works. I get 3-day weekends when I'm not going in for my school internship, so yeah, my whole schedule's just been way thrown off. And so I was like sleeping from like 12 to 8. Usually I'd get up at like 5. And so it's both Saturday night and last night, it was like I went to bed and then I was just wired, like could not sleep. And so I did the thing where eventually I just got up and started reading, and even then I just couldn't get tired. So I think I probably got maybe like 1 or 2 hours of sleep last night,
Okay, all
and
right.
it was Saturday night, so I'm
Yeah.
a bit firing on the final cylinders.
You know, though, now, like, basically, now we're finally sort of maybe possibly at a closer, something closer to like an equal level, right? You're
Yeah.
firing on one cylinder. I think I'm firing on all of them. So I think that finally, now we're more evenly matched.
I thought you were gonna say something like, now we're gonna like see like the real Jack, like no like kind of pretenses, like like I think this is sometimes when we're like exhausted by life or whatever, our teachers will kind of point that out, right? That like, hey, this is it, this is you. This is like your misperceived self. And I'm kind of feeling that, like honestly, a little bit of like the hallucinatory quality of everyday life is just like, okay, it's really not as solid as it seems.
No, all those
It
constructs, it's hard to maintain them all, right? So
is.
they begin, as the constructs begin to sort of like fall apart, right? Then so does our solidity, And it takes a lot of energy to maintain that, a whole lot.
Yeah, for
So
sure.
yeah. Well, I'm glad that thank you for coming anyway and not canceling on us.
Oh, totally. I
I
couldn't do
appreciate you
that.
being here, and I like your candor. I really like I think it's cool, right? You show up, and this is how you are, right? And that's great.
Yeah, that's, I
Yeah.
mean, that's, I feel like that's what Talk Openly has to be, if we're gonna be vulnerable and transparent, it's got to be with our everyday realities, what's happening right
Yeah.
now. So
Yeah, well, what's happening right now, just to be clear, is it's raining cats and dogs outside here in Sacramento, and I am on a somewhat spotty internet connection, on a computer with a broken keyboard. So, I'd say that the situation here is a little tired as well. Not me physically or mentally, but the environment is maybe a little bit tired as well. So if there's some hiccups, if there's some freezing of the computer or whatever, just trust that I'll do my best to come back
Yeah.
and keep it going. So,
Great.
but how
Yeah.
is, so while you're out gallivanting about Southern California,
Yes.
first of all, did you have a good time? And second, how was your practice during this time frame?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, I did have a good time. It's hard, right? Because like seeing family is always both like a mix of loveliness and also kind of sadness, you know? Like, there's ways that I'm very different from my family, and that's okay. But I don't necessarily get to like share my full self with them all the time. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
there's just a little bit of like, where I'm not part of their culture in
Do
a lot of
you,
ways.
yeah, do you find then, speaking of maintaining constructs, do you find yourself in that position where you have to put energy into maintaining their constructs of Jack?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I've dropped some of that, I think, over the years.
Yeah.
Part of that is just like physically how I present to my family now is very different than what I used to try to present as. And so that's, you know, different for them is like kind of the more masculine appearing Jack. But yeah, I mean, I think I've also like just kind of like forgiven that in my mind. Like I no longer feel like I have to like prove myself to them as like, no, this is me as my like separate autonomous self, you know? Like, and sometimes that comes out. It does come out in like little ways where I'm just like irritable about it, you know? But I've kind of just yeah, let loosened around it, I think. Not necessarily, I haven't let it go, and in no way am I gonna like not be myself, right? But I've loosened around needing them to see me exactly how I see myself, I guess is what I'm saying. Because
Yeah, boy, you've given up the impossible, haven't you?
Yeah, because my family's kind of worldview is just very different from my own, and that's just how it is.
Right.
And I'm not gonna bully them into seeing me a certain way.
No, it wouldn't work, right?
It doesn't work.
It doesn't
There's so
work
much
that way.
resistance, right?
Everybody wishes, actually, that they could just make everybody else believe and see things the way that they do. Then everything would be okay.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Then we would live under a certain form of it would be like my form of fascism, I guess.
Did you
Like
ever, yeah, it'd be
in
like
this
the,
way.
did you ever watch Star Trek, you know, the Borg?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like that. Like everybody's just like, the Borg, right? It's all just one thing. That's not exciting, right?
It's
We don't
not. No,
want
we don't
that.
want that.
No,
No,
no.
we don't want that.
Little diversity does a body good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Does a body and does a world good.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was enjoyable, and watch some movies, you know. Definitely feel a little bit like marinated in holidays and just want it to be like gone.
It's over,
Like
Jack. It's
it's over.
over. It's over.
It's
You're safe.
over.
It's
Oh
okay now. It's
my
okay. You made it through.
God.
You are
Okay.
now on the other side. You've made
Yeah.
it to the other side.
Oh
Congratulations.
goodness. Oh, phew. Yeah, and another cool thing, I feel like I'm talking a lot about myself right now because I'm kind of tired, I'm rambling,
Do
but
it.
in 5 months, I will almost be done with school. That's
Oh.
only 5 months away. That's
You know what's so cool about around this stage is that you can actually very easily imagine and tell yourself that in a future time, not too far away, it's already done. you're over it, right? You can almost envision yourself sort of like on the other side of that as well. Just like, you know, right before Christmas, I think, you know, when we were talking, there was this sort of like, we're going to survive. Okay, yeah, we can make it through. It's going to be over soon, right? At least that was my attitude.
Oh, yeah.
And with that faith and confidence, here we are. We made it to the other side. Yeah. And that same thing is true for your schooling, right? You've been doing it. You've been working hard at it. It's caused all kinds of stress and opened your mind in new ways and all kinds of stuff. And now it'll be over.
Yep. That is the way that I sometimes use the truth of impermanence as a little bit of an escape route.
That's right.
Like I'll kind of I'll be like, okay, it's gonna end because that's inevitable. Change is inevitable.
Right.
And so sometimes and I talked about this a while back when I did a talk at the temple where like I had to be a little bit careful to not use that as like kind of a spiritual bypass around like what I'm actually doing right now. So yes, it is encouraging. And I also want to like make sure to like be present for what I'm doing. Because that feels important too, I guess.
If you're going to make me. So what was it like? How long were you with family and doing the holiday thing?
Well, I was really only there for 4 days.
Perfect. So this question, this is a good question then.
Right.
What does your regular meditation practice, what happens to it when you go to LA for 4 days to be with family?
It's interesting. I have to fit it in, right? You know, I'm not on my schedule. So I have to be even more like diligent about, you know, like making space, making time. So for, you know, this round of holidays, a few days I would go out to a park that's near my sister's place. And you know, it was like 65 degrees, full sun. And so I was just like soaking it up and that was really nice. Doing meditation outside. I actually love meditating at public parks.
Yeah, me too.
There's something about like the sound of other people, activity, children, music, you know, all these things. It almost kind of like replaces the distraction that happens up here. It's like, okay, there's some distraction out there. So
out there.
Yeah. And it's in some way that's like kind of pacifying. So that was really pleasant. But there was one or two times that I did just have to do it kind of like in a pinch, like in a back room when other people are like clanging pots and, you know, playing music and stuff. And that's also fine. Just a different kind of distraction. But I do notice that with that kind of like rushing to get it done, you know, like to fit it in, there is a loss of the kind of like mystical element that maybe comes with a more intentioned practice. So
I know what you mean. The reason it was sort of for personal reasons I was asking. Because I was also gone for a short period of time. I was hanging out with family up north in Fort Bragg. That's where I got this cool hat. Got it at a thrift shop up in Fort Bragg. I love it. It's so warm. It's a wool hat and it keeps my bald head warm. And it makes me look like I have some hair in here. No, don't be fooled. There's nothing under it. Nothing at all. But it was interesting because I before I left, I was like, you know, grabbing my stuff and I had originally, I was like, okay, I'm going to bring my whole, like my mat and my meditation pillow and all of this stuff. And then I was like, no, actually I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to drag this stuff around with me. There's plenty of places to sit, park bench or whatever. And what I noticed actually was that over those 4 days, I did not sit and meditate, not in formal like meditation. I did the more it's weird, but like I didn't lose track of it. You know what I mean? Like the intention to be present, to be mindful, to be watching was still there. But I decided instead, because I didn't really, there weren't really a lot of opportunities to just like escape, eject, and go and like sit somewhere. So instead, I just would do it sort of in the course of being with everyone. And it was kind of funny, actually. We were at this, like, I was with several people, and we were at this like open mic thing. People are singing and playing music and stuff like that. And at one point, I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is ideal. I've got a seat. I have time. I have, you know, like there's all kinds of stuff, ruckus going on around me, but I can just be here. And yeah. It was this beautiful meditation. It was really gorgeous. And then my girlfriend sort of like, she like kind of tapped me and was like, are you meditating
right now? Nice.
And I found that, you know, like same thing in nature. So we would go for walks, and you know, like there were all kinds of wonderful like mushrooms and things. I love various funguses, and just seeing, you know, that area is just full of them, you know.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There was that, like going out, and while walking, you know, I would just like, I'd fall back a bit, you know, behind the rest of the group. And then just sort of like, just observe, just watch, you know, like this, like in, just instead of formal seated meditation, just be like, okay, like what's going on? Like, how's your mind right now? What's it look like? What is it that's pulling you away? And I found it helpful, but it's sort of like going to the gym or something like that, where the formal regular routine is really important to maintain. And even if you're not maintaining it in the same way, still putting some attention to it, you know, like if you're going to the gym, maybe, okay, fine, do a few sit-ups, do a few push-ups, do something, right, to keep it going, because otherwise there's more resistance to getting started. But it felt really good today to get like right back like into my space and my everything, and like get back into that sort of it's not always mystical, but you know, a little bit more along that kind of just that precious meditation space. I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah,
it felt really good to get back into it. So that's why I was curious.
And I love hearing about how you found the time within, you know, time with family. And I think, I mean, honestly, like that's what we should be doing, right? You know, it's like,
right.
But like what, you know, I was just thinking, you know, like I tend to kind of sometimes check out when I'm with my family a little bit.
Yeah, sure. And
I would love to, you know, practice that of like, no, actually I'm going to meditate on this. Like, I'm going to just see how focused I can be with this. And actually I did have that intention before one of my get togethers with people. But then I totally lost it. There was too much chaos, and but I like that idea of like, no, I'm going to use these moments that I have rather than.
That's what we're training for, right? That we're always in a meditative state, right? Always present, always watching. I actually found what was interesting is when I did what you just said with other people. So I'd be in a group, everyone's talking, and I have a tendency to want to talk a lot. Like, I like to hear myself talk. I like to argue. I like to whatever, BS, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is I noticed that. So I was like, I'd be a little bit more intentional and just observe for a while without talking. And what's really neat about it is that in conversation, if you're intentionally being present and paying attention to what's happening in front of you, you really get to hear what people are saying. What happens is your own engagement increases in quality, because you're actually responding to what other people are saying. It's a genuine conversation. You really are, like, you're getting sort of HD conversation, right? High definition, because you're really there for it. And not only that, but everybody else appreciates that too, right? Like there's a feeling of spaciousness and an allowing and not talking over, you know? And so it actually does a lot of good, I think, just in ordinary old conversations too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's something I need to remind myself of all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, especially with people that I'm like the closest with
Yeah.
too, you know, where
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm just, you know, like hearing about someone's day, you know, my partner or my roommate, where it's like, actually, that's really precious. I want to hear about your day,
Yeah.
but it's just so easy to check out, you know, in those moments where it's like, okay, I can kind of guess, you know, and if I'm just kind of responding like, oh wow, yeah, okay, yep,
Yeah.
yeah, it's I can be a little bit rude, I have to be honest, with my attention when it comes to my closer friends.
It's understandable. It really is. It is, for sure. But the best gift we can give anybody, close to them or not, is really our presence of being there. No, the more that we can do that, the more the better the experience is for everyone.
Yep,
Anyway.
absolutely.
All right. Well, what do you think?
Did we do it? We should practice some mind training.
Some mind training. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You've got the wherewithal to do a
I
little mind
don't.
training. Okay. All right.
I don't have the wherewithal, but you know, maybe something spontaneous will pop up in my mind.
I bet you that the RLSG, the Random Lojong Slogan Generator on lionsroardharmacenter.org, is going to perk you right up and you're going to get all excited about whatever comes up. I bet
I'm
you.
ready. I'm
Let's
ready.
see. Okay, I'm going to push the button.
All right.
Here we go.
Okay.
Oh.
Oh, no way.
Is the universe trying to tell us something?
Oh my God, I guess. And what's great is that, okay, so we've gotten this one at least two times before.
Oh, I think like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is showing up for our first show of 2024. So not only have we gotten it several times before, but it's the first one of 2024. I think that's a good sign that we really need to focus on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to read it?
I'm going to read it. 45, acquire the three root causes. According to Trala Kibgon, the three causes are one, the spiritual friend, two, the spiritual instructions, and three, a supportive environment.
Thank goodness we got all three of them, Jack. We can now rest. We acquired the three root causes. It's we success.
And then we're just done, right?
It's all over now, right? Once we got it, what else is there to be done, right? That's what I really like about this. I know I say it every time. But I feel really quite strongly that this is not a past tense sort of one and done sort of thing, right? Like this is about the beginning. This is the start, right? To in order to be well set to take this particular spiritual journey, you have to acquire the three root causes, right? And then it's a question of what you do with that. And I was just gonna, I was, I've been thinking quite a lot actually about the spiritual friend aspect of it. I really am grateful for all of my friends, especially within the Sangha. But one in particular, right? Lama Yeshe Jimpa. And you know, one of the things that's so great about him and about my other friends, especially in the Sangha, is that to the degree that these are spiritual friends, they serve as models for me, right? Just like the historical Buddha serves as a model for me, I can sort of ask myself, you know, like it's sort of like a basic question. I can just be like, well, you know, what would Lama do right now, right?
Totally, yes,
You
I
know,
do
like just
too.
that question alone, just that
Oh yeah,
will
so
put,
helpful.
oh man, it'll do all kinds of things, right? Because it's not simple. It's not this sort of like, oh, he would say be a nice guy or be, you know, no, actually, you know, but would the activity that I'm about to engage in, or would the train of thought that I'm currently humoring, what would Lama, if that was happening to him, what do I imagine him doing with that or saying about that, right? And actually, I use my other friends the same way. You know, I think about people that I admire, you know, who are really, really engaged and advanced on the spiritual path that we're on here. And I think of them sort of the same way, right? Like there's oftentimes these moments where I just think like, back, what would that be like if I, you know, like so and so, whatever, how would they approach this, right? Like, like what would Jack do?
You know, because all of us have you know, kind of like a kaleidoscope, right? Where the light of Dharma is kind of shining through us, and it's the same light, but it's all going to come out in different ways. And so that I love that idea of like thinking about what our different Sangha friends would do or say, because it's all going to be different.
Oh, of course.
And that's kind of beautiful. And then yeah, I mean, I really this one just really makes me think of you know, precious human life and that reflection, that you know, that we have these friends and of course particularly Lama, and that we have instruction, but yeah, not just instruction, but instruction in English, you know, that oh my gosh, like we are at a time in our history where it's incredible how much we have access to. You know, I'm reading a book of songs of Mahamudra meditation, and it's incredible that they're in English. You know, like this is only within the last few decades, and we have access to this knowledge that has been, yeah, very actually quite secret. So it's amazing. And then, of course, our supportive environment, of course, the temple, and also like our livelihoods, you know, that I'm here and I'm surviving, you know, this very kind of tough world that we're in right now, for a myriad of reasons, but I'm so grateful, that I have access to that.
You can imagine there are plenty of ways of making a living in this world that you can see how they might make it challenging to acquire the three root causes in the first place, right? Based, you know, everything from like the schedule and the nature of the work and all of that. And so, yeah, exactly that. This precious life that we have is one where we've met with the Dharma, we've met with a spiritual friend, right? We have what we need in order to do this.
So let's do it.
Let's do it. Why don't we start like with the very, very,
Oh,
very,
the very
very, very
beginning.
first thing?
Oh, that's right. I forgot. I forgot what we were talking about tonight. Yeah, we're
Yeah,
talking about suffering.
what
I know.
suffering?
It's the first of the Four Noble Truths. Which it's interesting. I learned today, and it makes sense, that the Four Noble Truths were not actually like the first kind of, you know, stuff that the Buddha would teach, particularly like lay practitioners.
Did
It's
you watch Doug's Dharma?
I did watch Doug's Dharma. Yeah, we should cite Doug's Dharma because we both watched that. But isn't that interesting though, that like that wasn't the first like the stuff that he would start out teaching. He would more be teaching about like ethics or, you know, compassion, like how we should treat people, how we should treat ourselves, which makes sense, you know, because that's the very foundational, like let's just stop hurting ourselves and others. That's a good place to start, right?
I love that. I love that because it's not only that the truths can be there, there's sort of a subtle understanding of them that we're going to explore, but there's also this sort of, you know, as bodhisattvas in training, it's important for us to sort of do the same thing, which is there is this desire to share the Dharma and tell people all about this is how it is and explain things to them. But actually, the most, you know, first, the most helpful thing we can do is just focus on working on ourselves and, you know, engaging in our training ourselves. You know, but also, like, if we really want to help another person, sometimes that help is shown by just teaching them something simple, right? Showing them whatever, you know, get clean water or how to use the internet or something like that.
really practical.
Practical advice. And that's what, that's, I think that's what Doug was saying, right? Lay people, the Buddha would teach lay people helpful things, like how to get along with their spouses, you know, how to deal with unruly children, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm reading Old Path, White Clouds by Thich Nhat Hanh. And so much of those stories are about like the Buddha teaching, you know, kings and princes, like, you know, how does one have like a healthy and peaceful and happy society? And how to apply that. That's such necessary, you know, skills for this time that, you know, it almost seems like it stops there, right? Like, okay, ethical action, right? And how to sit, how to calm one's mind. So that's huge. That's like, you know, Shambhala right there. So much are those kind of like preliminary, ethical kind of instructions. So Doug was saying that, you know, the Four Noble Truths were actually a little bit more kind of advanced.
Right.
Which was neat to me, I guess. I mean,
well, you know, it makes perfect sense because what is the, okay, so let me just ask you this. So of all the people who you've met who think they know something or other about Buddhism, but they're not necessarily practitioners, right?
Yeah.
And they say, oh, I know what Buddhism, I know what it's saying. It's saying that life is suffering.
This happened to me recently where I was in like a Zoom call for one of my classes. And this person was just kind of talking about like their work at this counseling agency, and they were really feeling a lot, you know, like they had taken it home with them, right? Like all the stuff that they've been working with people on. And they kind of just made like a little kind of like sarcastic comment, like, well, and you know what the Buddha says, like life is just suffering. And the conversation like went on, and I was like, gosh, I really want to go back and say, but also there's way more to that. And that's not like the tone that the Buddha would use. And like, but it, you know, it wasn't exactly the right time or to go into a whole explanation of that. It's so common, that idea that like, that's what Buddhism is about, is that like, it's suffering, just accept your suffering. And there's nothing really to do about it other than, you know, navel gaze.
Exactly.
A strong misconception in our society.
Just sit and meditate and push away all the negativity. That's how you're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Those are the sort of basic misconceptions, and that's happening nowadays, even with the Dharma being available, you know, all these teachings available in all these different languages and whatnot. So back then, when the first, you know, when the Buddha was first, you know, talking about these things, you can imagine that it was difficult for people to understand sort of the fine points, and it would take someone who was going to be dedicated, who was going to spend some time trying to understand it, and who really wanted to even just get the first of the, you know, the Four Noble Truths, right? Just to get that alone would take some time and some effort.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's get into it a little bit. Should we, you know, kind of like a definition, like what is suffering then? What is that?
I created a list, Jack. I have a list.
I like lists.
I have a list. Read it? Okay. Yeah. So the Pali word that we're talking about is dukkha, right? That's the suffering. That's what's translated as suffering in many, many cases, which is a little bit unfortunate because of the suffering in English sort of has this, it means something a bit more than what, it encompasses just one end of the spectrum. Right, of what we're talking about here. So I put together this list of translations of the word dukkha. These are all common. These are all common translations.
Okay.
So we'll start with suffering, unhappiness, pain, one of my favorites, which is unsatisfactoriness.
Yeah.
unease, stress, anxiety, distress, frustration, difficulty, discomfort, sadness, sorrow, grief, misery, not having what one wants, and having what one doesn't want.
Yeah, and in addition to that, having what one does want, and then the inevitability of it changing, and then we no longer have it in the way that we liked it or wanted it.
Right, exactly that. But what we're pointing to, what and the reason why I like unsatisfactoriness is because it kind of, there's like levels of unsatisfactoriness, you know, like there's this sort of very like low level persistent, and then there's like super high levels that we call suffering.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know,
oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know, like there is a breakdown though, you know, of the like the types of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or at least the kind that we're talking about, like dukkha falls into sort of like these three basic camps. What are they? There's dukkha.
The suffering of suffering.
The suffering of suffering.
Yeah, which is just like, it hurts. I don't like it. It's very obviously uncomfortable or just, yeah, unsatisfactory, something I don't want.
Yeah, like if you were out for a walk in the forest looking for mushrooms, and all of a sudden somebody shot you in the butt with an arrow.
No.
Yep.
That sucks.
That would suck. And right there would be dukkha.
Yeah. Just all out, like, that's no good.
That sucks. It doesn't matter if you're a deer or a human being or what you are. You get hit in the butt with an arrow. That's going to be some unhappy making. That's suffering.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that's the suffering of suffering. And then what's the other kind?
Suffering of change.
Suffering of change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's that all about?
That's when we are experiencing something that we tend to like. So something pleasurable, enjoyable, something that we're, you know, attached to. You know, it could be something that we have, desire for, and we've got it, you know?
Yep.
And it's like, oh, it feels good for a while. We're really liking it, holding on to it. And then what it could be that, you know, we get over it. We're kind of bored with it. It's maybe it's like, you know, too much of a good thing, right? You know, too much ice cream, too much sex, you know, too much of all the things. And it just kind of starts to get kind of cloying and uncomfortable. Or we have something, we love it, it's great, and the thing and ourselves inevitably change. And so there's a difference in the relationship. We can't go back to the way it was when it was like, oh, the wonderful attachment, the wonderful feeling of attachment.
Right. Yeah.
So it's always, yeah, it's always going to change. Yeah. The inevitable decay of all things. Oh God.
Right. The inevitable decay of all things. I liked, actually, I think it was Doug in Doug's Dharma who also, he said, this is, could also be thought of as the suffering of pleasure.
Yeah.
Just like you talked about, that it's actually, it is that suffering. We want things that we like to stay around and continue to make us feel the way that we felt.
Right. But instead it just gets uncomfortable. It's, you know, where it's, there's like the spectrum of it, you know, where it becomes addiction. And that is, you know, in no way pleasurable anymore at that
point. No, you know, like I really like cookies.
Oh, me too.
I love cookies, you know, and it takes me a while to recognize that I'm no longer enjoying the cookie eating, you know, like it's one thing. I love it when I can just get one good cookie. Like that's my favorite, because then I'm like, then I can sort of just like, but if there's a bunch of cookies, there's a problem, right? Because I will really enjoy that first one. And then I'm sort of like, yeah. One more. Right. And I'm like the cookie monster, but like, you know, like a second cookie or maybe a few pieces into the third one, it's not that great anymore.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not. No. Well, I wonder if that's why Americans in particular have such a hard time with the first noble truth and understanding it, is that like we're really good on like big portions and like having just like a ton of shit.
Yeah, right? It's never going to run out.
Yeah, it's never going to run out. We're just going to keep each one of us having one to two cars per person. And that's going to feel real good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
right.
Yeah. So we don't like the fact that, that actually the things that we think we like are, making us sick and unhappy and uncomfortable and destroying our world.
That's right.
Yeah. We don't like that idea.
No, no, no. So that's it. That right there, the suffering of impermanence or the suffering of pleasure is the second type. And then the third type is the kind that is existential suffering, right? It's the suffering of conditioning.
I want to hear more about that. Yeah.
I read a really good, I wish that I could just read this, a chapter out of Trungpa Rinpoche's, one of his books, where he's talking about the First Noble Truth.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful the way he talks about it. He's discussing the two aspects of mind. There's like the awareness, pure just awareness aspect of mind. And then there's the thinking, feeling aspect of mind. And he says that in the first place, that awareness, that cognition is the fact, it's actually creating this subject-object divide, the dualistic perception that we've been, that's why it's the suffering of conditioning. We've been conditioned, right, to see this me in here and it, them out there. And he does a great job. I mean, he spends a lot of time talking about how that causes suffering. But what he said, and I'm going to borrow his language to describe what I think is actually this. It covers all of dukkha, but in particular, what he was focusing on was this third type of conditioned suffering. And he said it's this basically this low level persistent recognition of the general fucked upness of the world and our existence. And he used that word a couple of times, right? Where he was like, it's just this fucked upness, right? Yeah. That's what it is. That's what's good. Like, and that you can't, that actually he says, you know, a lot of people, what the way he describes it, I thought this was so fantastic, that basically like we're ignorant of that third type, that conditioned suffering in most cases, because what's happened is that we've become imprisoned by it, and now it becomes our security. And so he gives the analogy of like a zoo, a wild animal who's captured and put into a zoo. And in the beginning, it's like, man, this is really messed up, right? I'm imprisoned. I've been, you know, like this is not okay, right? And that for a while there's this recognition of it not being okay, but then at some point, it actually, that captivity and that imprisonment, when it was initially, it was a source of pain and anguish and discomfort, it actually becomes kind of sweet. We identify with it, right?
And if you're getting fed, you know, like
that's right. It becomes the thing that you know. That's why it's conditioning. Right.
Yeah.
The animal gets conditioned to being in the zoo. We've become conditioned to be in this sort of dualistic state. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's the easiest type of suffering to ignore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because we've actually identified with it.
It gives us identity. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And,
no,
and
totally.
We don't want to let it go. We actually don't want to let that one go because
really, yeah, like on the surface, satisfying about it, right? Because I was actually thinking about this a lot after I saw the movie Oppenheimer. And I was like really enthralled with that movie. I still am. I think it's an incredible movie. But there was this feeling I was getting where I was just so absorbed in like the horror of what humans can do, right? Where there was like this kind of like this grandiose depression about like the state of the world and about like humanity and the horrible things that we can do to one another. And there was this like identification with that where it was like, oh my gosh, there's just nothing, there's nothing we can do. Like we're just fucked. We're fucked, you know?
Yeah.
And I really kind of was able to see that my mind was doing that I was like in some ways enamored with that, you know, there was like this kind of way that I could just like wallow in this like sorrow of the world. And I think we can do better. Like we can do a lot better than that. You know, we don't have to, we don't want that to be our sanctuary, you know, that like, oh God, yeah, nuclear war. Oh God, more like war in the Middle East, you know, like, oh, we're just so fucked. We're just, you know, no. For this world alone, you know, like this existence alone, we want to think better than that, right? But also just in terms of our spiritual practice, we can do a lot better than that. A lot better.
Absolutely. So we have all these, we have like, we get it, right? There is this this suffering, if you will, this unsatisfactoriness, this dis-ease, if you will. So like, is it like, are we just depressed Buddhists then? You know, like, I mean, come on. And there is some aspect to it that seems to be pointing to like, yeah, it's not just that life is suffering, like every little bit of it is permeated by it. So is that the message? And it, you know, is it hopeless? Should we be in despair?
Well, you know, I can't say that I've moved beyond that yet, to be honest. You know, I think I'm still like, I'm very kind of in like elementary school when it comes to like my Buddhist practice. And I can see through my teachers, right? Like Lama Jinpa is, you know, he is more aware of this noble truth than anyone that I know. And yet he's also probably the happiest person that I know. Absolutely the happiest person I know. And so there's something to that, right? Where I think, you know, the Buddha is imploring us to explore what this suffering is, you know, the suffering that is brought on by our attachment to things that inevitably will change and our aversion for things that, you know, are out of our control. Like we're going to die. We're going to we're going to get sick, you know, we're going to be reborn. Like those are things that are inevitable. And so, you know, if we keep running from that and thinking that we can, you know, drown ourselves in pleasure, that's where the real, that's suffering, you know? But our willingness to see it for what it is can release us, in a lot of ways. And so I know that like intellectually, I know that's like, that's what we're going for. Right. But I'm very much, I think right now, like in a kind of Buddhist depression where it's this is all suffering and I'm just so attached to all this crap. Like I'm almost kind of sick of myself feeling, which is okay. You know, I think that's okay to.
I think it's better than okay. I don't remember who I was quoting before, but that what you just described is this nausea that can be actually taken for good news in a way, yeah, right? So there's this, so Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, he actually says that, that this the bad news that we're talking about here is in itself good news.
Yeah.
I really like that. Can I, yeah, we have a few minutes. You mind? I'm going to read a little thing from
sure, him. Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. So he says, in the Mahayana, that's the particular tradition that we're talking about here of Buddhism, inspiration comes from experiencing the spark of intelligence or enlightenment in us. Discovering that potential is one of the fundamental characteristics of the Mahayana. Having looked into our feelings of inadequacy, pain, and confusion, we see them as neither good nor bad, but as workable. In our day-to-day life, we find that the search for pleasure, either materialistic or spiritual, is unconvincing. Behind that whole approach is a sense of dissatisfaction and continual struggle. Recognizing that dissatisfaction and struggle is the discovery of the first noble truth, the truth of suffering or dukkha. However, that discovery of the universality of pain is the discovery of Buddha nature as well. That realization is not stupid or ignorant, but intelligence. So the struggle we go through is an expression of enlightened mind. The bad news in itself is good news.
I love that.
I think that's pretty darn hopeful. And it actually, the reason why it resonated with me, I know that I've talked in the past about someone who helped me way, way, way back before I ever even thought about Buddha or Buddhism or anything. I recognized that he was sort of putting me onto the path. His name was Carl Silver, and what he taught me, I know I've already told you this, but he taught me to recognize when I was unhappy. And what was so amazing about that is that that right there is, in fact, to borrow a little bit more from Doug's Dharma, is that the First Noble Truth isn't just like a statement, it's actually a task, right? And the task is that is that the noble truth of suffering is to be fully understood. And the beginning of understanding something, to really understand something, is to at least first gain awareness of the fact that it is.
Yeah.
Right? That it's even there in the first place. And what blew my little mind back then was how incredibly unhappy I was all the time. And I didn't know that. If you had asked me, I would never, never in a million years have had said that. Never.
Right?
Except that when I was taught to look to see when I was unhappy, it turned out I was like regularly unhappy throughout the day, right? There were always these experiences in which there was some kind of discomfort or dis-ease or I wasn't satisfied or whatever, right? And so I began to see the pervasiveness of this suffering that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And that's just the beginning of really beginning to understand, you know, because like what's going to happen when we really get to see all this suffering is then of course we're going to naturally lead towards the second noble truth.
Right. Yes. Which I'm hoping maybe in a couple of weeks we can talk about the second noble truth if we're feeling up for it. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
And, you know, I always like to ask you when you come up with a topic, I like to ask if there was something that prompted the topic. So was there something this time that you felt like, okay, I really want to talk about suffering because of this?
I wish it was something profound. It wasn't. It was really just that I don't think that we have discussed, I think, at length the Four Noble Truths. And that I think that there's, you know, it's a pretty juicy topic, right? Like really just getting familiar with what we mean when we're talking about suffering is something that I think gets missed a lot, right? Yeah. And it's a common misconception about what's being said, like we were talking about. So that's all, just kind of a simple, like maybe a little bit of like lazy in a way where I was just like, you know, like this seemed easy to talk about.
Totally. Yeah. Well, there's a
we can even do it on one cylinder.
Yeah, I know, right? That's tonight. Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm definitely having some dukkha today with that tiredness, so it worked out. But yeah, I mean, I think like it was really good to point out that you know, we can get kind of lost in that idea that life is just suffering, and I can see how a cowboy yogi version of myself, maybe even just a regular version of myself, can get kind of melancholy and morose about that, whereas there's almost an attachment to suffering itself, like we talked about.
And yes, so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really important to bring up that, like, okay, I get that that's there and I don't want to linger there. That's not a... that maybe that's some stuff for poetry, right? Which is great. Poetry is great, right? Yep. But I also want to uncover and move beyond that, that kind of like grandiose depression that we were talking about.
Yeah, well, it's a, you know, it's a little, usually if we're, you know, we've narrowed down maybe a little bit too much, right? And maybe identified somewhat with the suffering, because that's, I think, one of the most helpful things about the tradition that we're in is to recognize the universe, universal aspect of this, right? That the suffering that I, the my suffering, although the conditions are unique to me, whatever they happen to be, that actual suffering, that whatever that is, many, many, many others have gone through that and are currently going through that exact same thing. I had this feeling the other day. I slammed my finger or something. Oh man, it hurt.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was a weird thing, but I did a little bit of, I was like, oh, well, that's pain. I see pain. It's still throbbing. Well, I recognize actually many people in this, there's billions of people, plenty of people right now, their fingers are hurting because they slammed their fingers, right? And then I was this, I tried to like kind of practice this feeling of like, right, actually I'm connected to this large group of people, all of us with like throbbing fingers right now.
Right.
And then it went away. And it was a neat experience.
Totally. Yeah, that was the same for me when I was experiencing this insomnia last night, where I was like, oh yeah, Jack, like there's like a like billions of people who are experiencing this. And, you know, even just people who are parents who don't normally experience insomnia, like there's so many people who are sleep deprived. Like, you're fine. This is like two nights out of your life that you've really had a hard time sleeping. Right. You know, like, you're fine. You're just like, listen to some Dharma and, you know, like fall asleep. You're good. Yeah. Well, my friend, I'm excited to announce that we're going to be talking with another good friend of ours next week. Patty Marcotte. I've never said her last name out loud. Do you know?
I think it's Marcotte, but.
Okay.
Well, we can ask her.
Yeah, we can ask her. Yeah. Patty is just an awesome human, but also works with children who have like some behavioral health issues. And we just thought she was a great person to talk with about working with challenging people. And so not necessarily children, but they are included as well. And I'm just, excited to talk about that topic because, man, we are certainly ourselves difficult people and also surrounded by them. So I think we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, as a challenging person myself, I can say that Patty has helped me a lot personally. So, I look forward to speaking with her.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. Well, in the meantime, take care of yourself.
Yep, you get some rest, Jack.
I'm gonna meditate and then go to bed.
All right, that sounds like a good game plan. Thanks for hanging out with me.
Yeah, thanks too. Talk to you
later. Bye, everybody.
Bye.